एकस्त्वमेव भगवन् इदमात्मशक्त्या। माया ह्ययोरुगुणया महदादशेषाम् सृष्ट्वा नुविश्य पुरुषस्तदसद्गुणेषु नानेव दारुषु विभावसु वाद्विभाषि एक वन त्वं यू एवा सेटनली भगवान औ माय लॉर्ड इदम् दिस मटेरियल वर्ल्ड आत्मशक्त्या बाय योर ओन पोटेंसी माया आख्या ऑफ द नेम माया युरु ग्रेटली पावरफुल गुनया कंसिस्टिंग ऑफ द मोड्स ऑफ नेचर महात आदि द महातत्व एसेट्रा अशेषाम अनलिमिटेड सृष्ट्वा आफ्टर क्रिएटिंग अनुविश्य देन आफ्टर एंट्रिंग पुरुषा द सुपर सोल तत् ऑफ माया तत् ऑफ माया ओके तत् ऑफ माया असत् गुणेषु into the temporarily manifested qualities nana variously eva is as if darushu into pieces of wood vibhavashu vibhavashu vat just like fire vibhashi you appear Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki. My Lord, you are the Supreme One, but by your different energies, you appear differently in the spiritual and material worlds. You create the total energy of the material world by your external potency, and after creation, you enter within the material world as the Super Soul. You are the Supreme Person, and through the temporary modes of material nature, you create varieties of manifestation, just as fire entering into wood of different shapes burns brilliantly in different varieties. Let's break down this translation into little parts so that we can then relate the parts to the purport that Srila Prabhupada is writing. Srila Prabhupada writes two paragraphs on this, and each paragraph talks about each particular theme from the verse. From the translation. So let's break it down a little bit into our, let's call it our layman term, you know, and then we'll take it from there. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmaye Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशातारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासदी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम Rama Rama Hare Hare Ekastvam eva ekastvam ekas means one okay eka tvam means you bhagavan means bhagavan the supreme personality of godhead so this particular text is within the context of Dhruva Maharaj offering his heartfelt prayers to the Supreme Lord. When the Lord appears in front of Dhruva Maharaj after his intense meditation, and Dhruva Maharaj finds the Lord in front of his eyes, which is similar to the Lord that had been in his heart when he was deeply meditating, Dhruva Maharaj is offering this prayer. So there are a set of 6 or 7 prayers. This is, I think, second or third of the prayers that he is offering. So that's why when you read it, it sounds like a prayer, no? Rather than a description. So what is Dhruva Maharaj exactly saying to the Lord? He is saying that Ekas Tvam Eva Bhagwan. Ekas means one, Tvam means you, and Bhagwan means the Supreme. So you are the one Supreme. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you are one, the Supreme One. Then, Idam Atma Shaktya. Excuse me. Idam means this material world. This material world that the Lord creates. So just keep that in mind. Idam means? Good morning. Material world. So Idam means this material world. And Atmya Shaktya means, Atma means His Self, and Shakti means energy. So the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, creates this material world using His own Shakti, using His own energy, His own potency. Clear? Because unless you follow this theme, you know, then the purport will just read it and nothing will make sense. So the Supreme Lord creates this material world using His own potency. What is that potency that He uses? Maya kiyayoru gunaya mahadad shesham. Maya kiyayoru. That potency that He uses to create the material world is Maya. The Lord has got three energies: internal, external, and marginal. So far we are focusing on the external energy, which is Maya. And what is that Maya? Gunaya Mahat Adesham. Gunaya. Now, that material energy or the external energy is made up of guna. Three gunas. Satogun, Rajogun, and Tamogun. So the three modes are the external energy is made up of the three modes of the material nature, is what Dhruva Maharaj is praying. Srishtva Nuvishya Purushas. Then after creating the Srishti, after creating the material world, then what does the Lord do? Srishtva Nuvishya, He enters. No, Vishya means He enters. So He enters this material world as the Purusha. Now in this Purusha, Dhruva Maharaj is referring to the Lord's aspect of, how does the Lord enter into the material world? As the Super Soul in each and every atom. So He enters the material world as the Super Soul. Tad Asad get Guneshu, and Tad and Asad. No? This external creation, which is the material world, Dhruva Maharaj is saying is Asad. No? There is Sat and there is Asat. Sat means it's eternal, no? And Asat means it's not eternal, it's temporary. So then he clarifies that this material world is temporary. Nane vadarushu vibhavashuvat vibhashi. And then he gives an analogy. Just as fire is fire, no? But it takes different formations according to the size and quality of the wood it is burning. Correct? You know, if you have a stock, a small stock of wood, it will burn in one shape. And if you have a big pile of wood, it will burn in another shape. The fire will take different shapes, also according to the moisture of the wood, etc. And if the forest is burning, then it takes another shape, the fire altogether. So just as the fire is the same, but it takes different formations according to the shape, according to the size, shape and quality of the wood, similarly, the external energy, which is Maya, made up of three modes of material nature, takes different formations according to the different aspects of the material creation. In other words, what he is saying, Dhruva Maharaj, is that the living entities, which is the Jiva, which is us, are in this material world, together with the material energy of the Lord, which is the external energy, the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, and we take different shapes and forms according to our different desires. So for example, some living entities will be devotees, and therefore they are no longer situated in the external energy of the Lord, but in the internal energy of the Lord, which is spiritual. And some jivas, who want sense gratification, will be situated in the external energy of the Lord, gratifying their senses. So the senses of the living entity take different shapes according to their different desires, notwithstanding they are all situated in the same energy of the Lord, either external or internal energy of the Lord. And the energy of the Lord is always spiritual. This is, you have to understand this point as well. The energy of the Lord, even if it is the external energy, it is still spiritual. Sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that the Maya or the three modes of the material nature are material in nature. In one sense they are, but technically speaking they are also No? Because they are energy of the Lord, they are spiritual. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that Devi Hesha Gunamai. No? This modes of the material nature, Gunamai, is Devi Hesha. It's divine energy. He doesn't say this is material energy of mine. No? So the material, the external energy of the Lord is also spiritual. And Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada will explain that. So let's read the verse to see if it makes sense this time. Okay? My Lord, you are the Supreme One. Ekastvameva Bhagavan. But by your different energy, you appear differently in the spiritual and material worlds. You create the total energy of the material world by your external potency, which is Maya. And after creation, you enter within the material world as the super soul, which is Paramatma. You are the Supreme Person. And through the temporary many modes, which is Asad, temporary modes of material nature, you create varieties of manifestation, just as fire entering into the wood of different shapes burns brilliantly in different varieties, purport. In the first paragraph, Srila Prabhupada will explain about the fact that the Lord, when He creates the material manifestation using all His different energies, does not lose His identity as a person. And He refutes the Mayavadi philosophy, whereby, you know, their philosophy is that, you know, the Lord is impersonal. You know? And because He is all-pervading, therefore He is impersonal. Srila Prabhupada explains to us that the Lord is personal, although He is, you know, pervading everywhere, just as the sun, which pervades everywhere, does not lose its identity as the sun. The sun remains the same, although it is all-pervading. So let's read the first aspect of that translation. Srila Prabhupada explains. Dhruva Maharaj realized that the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, acts through His different energies. Not that He becomes void or impersonal and thus becomes all-pervading. The Mayavadi philosopher thinks that the Absolute Truth, being spread throughout the cosmic manifestation, has no personal form. But here, Dhruva Maharaj, upon realization of the Vedic conclusion, says, "You are spread all over the cosmic manifestation by your energy. This energy is basically spiritual. But because it acts in the material world temporarily, it is called Maya or illusory energy. In other words, for everyone but the devotees, the Lord's energy acts as external energy." Dhruva Maharaj could understand this fact very nicely. And he could understand also that the energy and the energetic are And he could understand also that the energy and the energetic are one and the same. The energy cannot be separated from the energetic. In the second paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how the Purusha, you know, the super soul, enters into the material manifestation. And before and after analysis, what is the situation of the external energy, the matter, without the presence of the super soul? And then after effect, what is the effect, what is the situation of the matter when the super soul enters into the matter? So before and after analysis, yeah? The identity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the feature of Paramatma or super soul is admitted herein. His original spiritual energy enlivens the material energy. So before and after. Before it is not enlivened, after the super soul enters, it gets enlivened. Enlivens the material energy. And thus, the dead body appears to have life force. Voidist philosophers think that under certain material conditions, the symptoms of life occur in the material body. But the fact is that the material body cannot act on its own. Even a machine needs separate energy, electricity, steam, etc. It is stated in this way that the material energy acts in varieties of material bodies, just as fire burns differently in different wood according to the size and quality of the wood. In the case of devotees, the same energy is transformed into spiritual energy. This is possible because the energy is originally spiritual, not material. As it is said, Vishnu Shakti Para Prakta. The original energy inspires the devotee and thus he engages all his bodily limbs in the service of the Lord. The same energy as external potency engages the ordinary non-devotees in material activities for sense enjoyment. We should mark the difference between Maya and Swadhama. For devotees, the Swadhama acts, whereas in the case of non-devotees, the Maya energy acts. And Swadhama is a concept that Srila Prabhupada had picked up from the previous verse. which His Grace Gopavindas Prabhu was explaining yesterday. Dhruva's first prayer was about the Lord's Swadhama, His internal energy. And then Dhruva Maharaj is talking about the material creation in His next prayer. So, this particular prayer is a little bit technical, because the Dhruva Maharaj is talking about the material energy and the spiritual energy, you know, and the various manifestations and all that. The overall context of this text, as I said, is that Dhruva Maharaj is now seeing the Lord in front of his eyes. You know, he has got the vision of the Lord, and being empowered by the Lord himself, he is offering various prayers to the Lord. We have been hearing the Dhruva Maharaj pastime for a long time now, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam classes, almost, you know, for over 3 months. So a lot of you, know, are quite, I take it on the assumption that a lot of us are already quite familiar with the pastime, you know. So let's pick it up from the point that what are the lessons that we can learn from this particular pastime. This pastime is demonstrating to us a situation from crisis to Krishna. From a total devastation and heartbreak that Dhruva Maharaj goes through after being thunderbolted with insults by his stepmother and the silence of his biological father, he is devastated. And being a Kshatriya, he is also angry. No. Being infuriated, he takes it as a stepping board, aided by the good counseling of his mother and spiritual master. He achieves self-realization, the perfection of life, within quite a short time. Within 6 months of his meditation, a five-year-old boy achieves perfection. Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with amazing pastimes, you know, that gives us much needed wisdom that we need for keeping our sanity, you know, in these turbulent times of Kali Yuga. We all go through certain turbulence in our life from time to time, correct? Anyone exception? A lot of us, you know, are Indian bodied background. So we left, you know, one place for the other, thinking, you know, that life will be very happy here. But what we discovered is that the problem remained the same, but the flavor may have changed a little bit. More problems. One person is saying more problems. Honest participation. Now, perhaps, you know, the flavor has changed. We may have had a lot of time where we were, but no money. And when we come here, perhaps a lot of money, but no time. Maybe no food where we were, compared to, you know, all fast food where we are. Thanks to the temple that we at least get some hot pakoras every now and then. You know? Otherwise it's all sandwich and, you know, on the go eating at the desk in the office. You know, the problem continues. You know? So Srimad Bhagavatam, and for that matter even Bhagavad Gita, tells us how to deal with this problem, these problems. You know? Bhagavad Gita is a philosophical dissemination of information by Krishna. But that's, you know, in one sense, you know, it's philosophy only. Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration of the pastimes of personalities who have already gone through these troubles in their life and how did they deal with it. So through picking up on their experiences and their realizations, now we gain much needed valuable insights into our own life to deal with the crisis. If you compare this pastime to the pastime that just finished off, you know, in the previous section of Bhagavatam, was the pastime of Daksha and Lord Shiva, you know, the tension and dispute between Lord Shiva and Daksha. Daksha was already quite a successful person. And being, annihilated by his, intoxicated by his own pride, led to his big fall down. No? So that was the pastime of from success to devastation. Okay. The immediately after, Maitreya Muni, when he's speaking with Vidura, speaking to Vidura in this particular section, he picks up a pastime of crisis. So from success to crisis was Daksha. Dhruva's pastime is from crisis to success. No? So we can learn both. No? If we are successful, and if pride intoxicates us, then the higher we go, the bigger the fall. No? And in this case, you know, when Dhruva Maharaj is suffering because of child abuse by his stepmother, and I was actually just recently attended a seminar, you know, on child abuse in the office, and it interestingly it talked about that one of there are many aspects of the child abuse, you know, in the modern legislation. One aspect of child abuse is, you know, there's a bullet point, and it explains that it is deprivation of emotional needs of a child. Deprivation of emotional needs of a child. And it clicked immediately to me from Bhagavatam that Dhruva Maharaj actually went through that experience himself. What he wanted? He just wanted to cling to his father's lap, you know. And that's natural of a child. A child wants, you know, that love and affection from their parents. So Dhruva, at that age of 5, just wanted to cling to the laps of his father. And his father was ignoring him on the fear of his wife. And of course we know that how Surichi, being the stepmother of Dhruva, chastised Dhruva quite heavily, you know, with great injustice, which tormented Dhruva's heart, you know, and he was heartbroken. So that, you know, deprivation of emotional needs even existed at that point in time, you know, in that particular yuga. Now, as a child, well, let me take one step back now. Let me talk about Bhagavatam first. Because I was talking about how Bhagavatam gives us that wisdom, you know, that can keep us sustained in our spiritual journey. Krishna has got many different forms of incarnation. Okay, when Krishna wants to appear as a human being in the material world, he comes as Lord Ram, Krishna himself, Vamandev. When Krishna wants to appear in the material world as water, then he appears as, you know, the holy rivers, Yamuna, Ganga. When Krishna wants to appear in the material world as stone, rocks, he appears as Giriraj. Similarly, when Krishna wants to appear in the material world as a book, then he appears as Srimad Bhagavatam. No? That's why Srimad Bhagavatam is called the literary incarnation of the Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, when the sages of Naimisharanya ask Suta Goswami, O sage, where has religion resided after the departure of Krishna from this material world at the end of Dwapar Yuga? Then the sages explain to the Suta Goswami explains to the sages of Naimisharanya that after Krishna's disappearance, the religious principles are now found, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which has arisen, you know, for the welfare of the people of Kali Yuga. And it explains that Srimad Bhagavatam tells us about what is the absolute truth, you know, the real religion. There is truth, there is absolute truth, you know, and there is false. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a book of, you know, which tells us what is the absolute truth. And Suta Goswami explains that absolute truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such, you know, wonderful poetic words, you know, Sri Prabhupada translates into English. Absolute truth is real religion. Absolute truth is the reality distinguished from illusion. From Tamsoma to Jyotirgamya. From illusion to reality. Reality distinguished from illusion for what benefit? For the welfare of all. Not just for one person, or not just for one caste, not just for one race, not just for one country. For the welfare of all. And this is the whole genesis, you know, of what Sri Prabhupada broadcasted when he left Vrindavan for USA. To kick people out of their illusion, bring them into reality, so that everybody is benefited. You know, one big house where everybody can live happily. So, this Srimad Bhagavatam, although in one sense it's about Krishna, higher than that is the fact that this Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. Many times we get told that the holy name, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is Krishna. So when Krishna wants to incarnate as in the name form, then he takes the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. No? So various incarnations which we talked about. No, the mountain, the animals, the human beings, the water, the stones, the book, the name. No? So this book is Krishna. And that is quite higher level of realization that it needs for us to actually digest it. A lot of time, we take the book and then say, I've read Srimad Bhagavatam, and we close it, and time to time we might not even be so respectful to it, we just glance the pages, and mark over it, etc., etc. But we have to be cognizant of the fact that this Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna, and therefore it contains all the wisdom that we need when we are going through, our tough times, as well as for our own spiritual advancement. Srimad Bhagavatam is a nested conversation, we say. In the Bhagavatam, there is a conversation which starts with Sutta Goswami with the sages of Naimisharanya, and then there are conversations within conversations. Now, why did Sutta Goswami present it like that? He presented it like that to make it more captivating for us. Imagine when two people are speaking, or one person is giving, a talk somewhere, in your university or office or somewhere. If one person is continuously speaking, then we tend to doze off. After 30 minutes, the concentration level goes down and we doze off. But when there's a drama or there's a movie, or there's an act, when various people are coming and talking, then it keeps us enlivened, correct? It keeps us captivated to the topic, to the discussion, to the message. So similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is a nested conversation, therefore it keeps us awake. What is happening now? Different pastime is happening, and then another conversation within a conversation. So it's full of nested conversation to keep us captivated towards the message without making us, pushing us into any boredom. So, in this particular pastime, the lesson learned is, how to deal with crisis. When we are abused, when we are insulted, when we are neglected. As I was saying, Krishna, I need some water, please. Little bit warm. Thank you. What was I saying? I was saying that I wanted water and I forgot what I was saying. I was saying that Dhruva Maharaj wanted to cling on the lap of the father, which is a natural affection that a child needs. And for those of us who are grihasthas with children, we go through this. And of course, we also went through this when we were kids, but we have possibly forgotten. It's probably fair to say that generally, for human beings, the source of happiness actually starts from this particular phenomena, of trying to cling to your parents. When the child, when the baby or 1 or 2 or 3 year old, they have got no other shelter, and they have no other problems as well. They don't have stress. They probably don't have to study too much at that time as well. So all they need is they are fully surrendered to their father and mother. And their source of happiness is actually coming from this, being clinging to the parents. Whenever there is a danger, they just run to their parents. Which is what Dhruva Maharaj is trying to do. As they grow up, then, at the age of, 6, 7, 8, 9, they think, or we thought, that our source of happiness is from playing with toys. So there's a transition from being clinging to the parents and breaking their back. A lot of time you see, mothers trying to hold the 6-year-old, and it's like, oh my God, can you get down? You see in the temple, during the kirtan time, the mother is trying to dance, and the child wants to cling on their lap, or on their shoulder. And the parents are saying, can you just dance for some time? So it becomes quite troublesome, after some time. Some of you are smiling. Probably you've been through that. Then the kids want to play, we want to play with the toys because we think that's our source of happiness. These days maybe kids don't play with toys because they just play with electronic gadgets, iPad and iPhone, and that's all they need. And after some time, when we get bored of the gadgets, fidget spinner came, and it spinned out at the speed at which it came in as well. Within a couple of months, kids got bored of the fidget spinner. Now they want iPad again. So then again, no satisfaction in a material toy, Then, they want a bike now, they want a bicycle. From toys we transition to bicycle. We think happiness will come in the bicycle. That doesn't give us everlasting happiness. Then we want a real motorbike now. You know, vroom, vroom, vroom. You know, we can show that this goes at a particular speed. We think that happiness will come from the motorbike. After some time, the motorbike also gets boring. Then we want somebody else behind us on the motorbike. No? One is not enough. So we want a back passenger, you know, who clings to us. You know? So we think happiness will come from a passenger in the motorbike or a passenger in the car. You figured out what I mean, yeah? So we think that will give us happiness. Then after some time, you know, we want some long-lasting relationship with that passenger on the motorbike, you know, so we get married. And then thereafter, we live happily ever after, right? So that's the material world, you know. We think that happiness will come from one to the other, but we go through this transition and nothing satisfies us. Dhruva Maharaj thought, you know, which is natural, you know, for a child to cling to his father for his safety. Now, we know that, of course, his mother, you know, Uttanapad was his father. Just a quick recap, no? King Uttanapad had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. No? Suruchi was the wife that was more dear to the husband, to Uttanapad, to king. No? Suruchi means, you know, Ruchi means taste. And Suruchi means, you know, a very taste or higher taste. The word Su in Sanskrit means, it's an adjective that adds, heightens, you know, the particular noun in this case. So Suruchi means, you know, higher taste. And she had, the king had higher love and affection for Suruchi. Therefore her name was Suruchi. You know, being deeply captivated by lusty affairs towards the materially beautiful wife, the king was more favorable to Suruchi, who is Dhruva's stepmother. His second wife was Suniti. Niti means ethics or justice or being fair. Like in Australia, you know, the Aussies will say fair dinkum. Fair dinkum means, you know, just give me a fair chance. So Niti means, you know, give me a fair chance, being ethical. And Suniti means somebody that who is very, very ethical. Very ethical person. So Suniti, although was, you know, virtuous, you know, she was a meritorious person compared to Suruchi, who was a notorious person. Notwithstanding that she was, you know, full of wisdom and ethics, the king didn't have, you know, a loving affection to her. If anything, she was neglected in her own palace, treated as a maid servant. And from this Suniti came Dhruva. So when Dhruva was blasted by his stepmother Suruchi, you know, that, you know, you are not entitled to sit on the lap of your father, you know, go and die, and in your next life, you know, you may be lucky enough to born as my son, then you can sit on my lap. Those are the words of chastisement that was given to Dhruva, and of course Dhruva ends up crying. You know, he's jolted, he's devastated, he's crying, you know, and weeping he goes to his mother, you know, to relay, you know, what has happened in the parliament. Now, whenever we hear this pastime, we feel quite sad for Dhruva Maharaj. Correct? No? Just imagine if we have a 5-year-old child and somebody has, you know, abused him, you know, or neglected him or slapped him. Then of course, you know, his parents will feel hurt. And even if we are not the parent of the child, we will still feel hurt. Because it's not fair. Thank you. I agree. So we feel, we empathize, you know, Dhruva's situation at the moment. Now, equally, it may be possible, and you don't have to answer this, you can answer it for your own self, you know. As much as we feel sad to see others cry, perhaps, at some times in our life, we may have also made others cry. Possible? Just as we feel sad, you know, if somebody is crying and we empathize and sympathize with them, similarly, time to time, you know, sometimes consciously, sometimes, you know, unintentionally, we might have also ended up making others cry. And, you know, afterwards we might regret our actions, and sometimes we might not. You know, time and circumstances tells us, you know, whether that action was right or wrong. Of course, generally speaking, it's wrong. But we end up making others cry. So, we should be mindful, you know, of the feelings and the emotions of other living entities in the devotee community, or anywhere for that matter, at home, in the office, you know. The sympathy and the empathy, you know, that the living entities need for their love and affection, you know, is something that we have to seriously be mindful of. Otherwise, you know, our words and action tend to be sometimes something that insults, you know, or causes injuries to others, emotional injuries to others. So, you know, a lesson that we can learn out of Suruchi's bad behavior of the things we should not do. Dhruva Maharaj weeping, Dhruva at that point in time, he was a Maharaj. Dhruva weeping goes to his mother Suniti and relays all the things that has happened to him, the injustice. And Suniti tells him that when Dhruva puts his demands on the table, you know, that I want a palace that is more significant or more higher or more opulent than not only my father but also of my grandfather. And also, you know, it's more opulent than my great-grandfather. Dhruva's great-grandfather was Lord Brahma. So he wanted something, you know, a palace that was even more opulent, you know, than Lord Brahma himself. That is what he wanted. That was his material desire. Suniti tells him that if you are adamant on achieving this goal, you know, which seems like a mission impossible, then you have to, you know, search for Lord Vishnu. And then we know all this pastime, how, you know, Dhruva Maharaj goes to the forest, meets Narad Muni and starts chanting, you know, through the guidance of Narad Muni, you know, the mantra that Narad Muni gives him, which is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So he chants this mantra together with, you know, the worshipping the Lord. He does the archa aspect of the worship as well, you know. Archa and the meditation goes together, hand in hand. We know all that. So, if you see that Dhruva Maharaj takes this insult to him as the stepping board, you know, as a springboard towards achieving something more glorious, you know. Although his initial motive is to get something material from the Lord, you know, he wants a palace that is quite opulent. So his desire is adulterated, you know, it's motivated desire, something, you know, sense gratificatory activity that he wants from the Supreme Lord. That is his desire. But because of the good counseling of his mother and more importantly his spiritual master Narad Muni, you know, he is trying to, through the chanting of the mantra that is given to him, he is able to purify his desires, you know. And at the end we know how Dhruva Maharaj then tries to reject what his initial desire was and just wants, you know, the feet of the lotus of the Lord as his shelter. So his desire becomes totally purified through the chanting of the mantra that is given to him. When we undergo through similar situations, you know, when we are emotionally deprived, you know, when we are hurt, when we are sad, when we think that injustice has been done to us, you know, at family affairs, you know, in the office, with friends, at temple, wherever. If we think that something incorrect has happened to us, it's so heavy that both of you have to carry it, yeah? There's a lot of water now. Thank you. Thank you, kids. So, two things can happen to a person when the person is feeling neglected or is angry. One is, we in that anger, we become more angry, no? And we become mad, no? And bewildered with that kind of temperament, no? We start causing devastation to others' life. Let's say from the, you know, pages of the Vedic scriptures, let's take Duryodhana, a person to visualize this. When he was humiliated, when he fell on the tiles which he thought were water and he was careful, etc. And then the pastime, you know. Then how, you know, the girls laughed at him. That insult caused injury, you know, to his heart, and he wanted to take revenge. And that revenge became so passionately he wanted to take revenge that he became completely irreligious, no? Completely adharmic he became through that particular insult. And that is coupled with the fact that he had bad association, you know, the power of bad association we can see, you know, that can cause something that was probably not that significant into something that created wrath at the end of the day. No? Now you compare this to Dhruva's pastime. Again, he has been insulted, you know, and hurt, but through the power of good association, you know, the whole stimuli of anger has been converted into pure devotional service unto the Lord. So the injury and the insult that we go through, you know, the emotional deprivation that we go through, in of itself is neither good or bad. You know. As Radhanath Swami says, you know, what happens to us is outside our control. How we choose to react to the situation is fully within our control. You know, our karmic reaction will come to us. But how we choose to react to the situation is more a sign of maturity. So Dhruva Maharaj, when he takes the good counseling from Narad Muni, you know, he is able to use that stimuli of anger, you know, of being so ferocious, you know, into something that is so sublime, devotional service. So this stimuli in Sanskrit is called Uddipan. We all have our, you know, particular Uddipan, something that stimulates us. And how we use that stimuli in Krishna service, you know, or our sense gratification is, you know, within us, within our prerogative, coupled by, you know, the association that we get from time to time. Now, you will see tomorrow, and I'll just jump a little bit into what is happening tomorrow's text. Dhruva Maharaj tells the Lord that there are four types of people who approach you. And we know this from Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvidha bhajante ma. Chana sukritina arjuna. Hayagriva. You know this verse? Chaturvidha bhajante maam. You don't? Okay. Chaturvidha bhajante maam. Jana sukritina arjuna. Artho artyati jignyasur. Jnanischa bharat tarshava. So Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the same thing that Dhruva Maharaj is repeating in the next two verses. He says that four types of people come to you. Chatur means four. Chaturvidha bhajante maam. Why do they come to you? For bhajante maam. No? Bhajate means worship. Prabhupada explains as worship. So four types of people who come initially to worship Krishna. And they are jnanis, who want knowledge. The wealth seeker, no? Who wants material wealth. No? The inquisitive, the one who wants to know what is happening. You know, and the one who is distressed, no? Who is going through a suffering. You know, and he thinks, you know, that the Lord will be able to take away his suffering, his or her suffering. And Dhruva Maharaj is realizing that he's such a fool, or he was such a fool, that he came to the Lord with these four aspects in mind, and of these four, he came as an arthati. He came to ask for material wealth. Yeah? We understand from Bhagavad Gita that of these four types of people who come to Krishna, the arthati, the one who comes to the Lord to ask for material wealth, is actually the lowest of the four. All four are quite lowest in one sense, because none of them are coming for pure devotional service, or none of them are even coming for devotional service. They are all coming for materially motivated, adulterated desires. And of the four, the jnani, the wealth seeker, the inquisitive, the wealth seeker, or and the distressed, the wealth seeker is the one who is the lowest of the rung, because it's purely material. The one who is coming for knowledge, at least, you know, is asking for knowledge. The one who is coming when he's distressed is actually, you know, trying to get out of his distress. When we are in emergency, we go for somebody to solace us. So that can be a little bit acceptable. But the one who comes to the Lord for wealth, you know, is the lowest of all. And Dhruva is regretting that he came as a wealth seeker. Now, Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita that after the Chaturvidha Bhajante Maam, four types of people who come to the Lord, and note carefully that Krishna says, Chaturvidha Bhajante Maam, they come to me to worship me. Then what happens to these four categories of people who remain sincerely connected with the devotees or with the Lord? Then what happens to them is that Bahunam Janmenam Ante Jnana Vam Maam Prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatmasu Durlaba. So Bahunam Janme Namante, after many, many births, Bahunam Janme Nam, after many, many births, Bahunam Janme Namante, Jnana Vam Maam Prapadyate, one who gets the knowledge that who Krishna is and who the living entity is. So let's take one step back again. Four types of people who come to Krishna. What are the four? Of the four, if they remain in Krishna consciousness for some time, you know, with the help of the association of devotees, then what happens to them? Bahunam janmanamante, jnana vam maam prapadyante. So if they stay in this process for long enough, then what will happen to them? That they will become jnanavan. They will become knowledgeable. You know? They will know who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, what is our sarup, you know, the jivara sarupa hoy Krishna and Nitya Das. We have the sevens of the Lord. And then he will become prapadyate. So from bhajate, the transition is to prapadyate. Bhajate is just to come to worship. You know? Worship the Lord to get something. But prapadyate is surrender. Ye yatha mam prapadyate, Krishna says. You know, tam sataiva bhajame ham. As you surrender unto me, I'll reward you accordingly. So sharanagati happens. You know? And we can see exactly the same transition of Dhruva Maharaj from bhajate, worshipping the Lord for material desires, to prapadyate, you know, to surrendering to the Lord. That now, oh my sweet Lord, I don't want anything. All that I want is, you know, service at your lotus feet. And not only that, you know, I'm regretting so much that I came to you to ask for something that is so small. You know, Srila Prabhupada said, you know, Dhruva Maharaj's prayer, he coined nicely in English there. I was looking for broken pieces of glass and now I have found diamond. You know, why he compares the palace that have been the, you know, the most opulent in the entire creation as broken pieces of glass. Now Krishna also tells the same in the Bhagavad Gita that a person who is self-realized, he sees pebbles, stones and gold as same. And Dhruva Maharaj is exactly doing this. You know, the gold that he has got, you know, the gold that he wanted, the palace gold that he wanted, the palace that he wanted to be made up of gold, he sees that as equal as stones and pebbles, you know, broken pieces of glass. And then Krishna tells us that when the realization of this self-realized soul goes even higher, deepens, then he sees not just material items of stones, pebbles and gold as same, but he also sees every living entity as same. No? What's the verse? Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavi hastini suni chaiva swa pakecha pandita sama darshina. So this pandita, self-realized soul, sees everyone with equal vision. Firstly, his vision of equality goes to material objects, pebbles, stones and gold. And then his vision, you know, becomes equipoised, not just with matter and living entities, but matter and living entities together is equal vision. You know, Pandita Samadarshina. And that's exactly what Dhruva Maharaj is teaching us. Through the process of Bhakti Yoga, you know, we go through the transition of purifying our material desires into spiritual desires. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, writes in the purport that, you know, the Lord's energy can put people into two buckets. Remember? Material through the maya, you know, through the illusory energy, into one particular energy through which they satisfy their senses. And on the other hand, you know, the same living entity can be put in the spiritual energy, which is Atmya Shakti, and through which, you know, they stop sense gratification and do spiritual activities. One time, talking about, you know, insult and incorrect accusations, Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Mayapur, and this is at the beginning the journey of ISKCON, some devotees came and told Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, people are saying, or they are decrying your efforts. For a person who went, you know, to the USA with 40 rupees in his hand and was trying to give bhakti to everybody, to be catcalled, you know, to be criticized for his effort, you know, can be quite demotivating." So devotees told him that, you know, the people are saying that, you know, Prabhupada, you are an ex-businessman, you know, and you are doing all this ISKCON as a business to make money. Now, if you think of it, you know, if we went through such a hardship, you know, to give Krishna consciousness to somebody, and in return people, you know, give you the feedback, you know, that you are trying to make, you know, mm-hmm, your money minded and all that. Now we'll be devastated, because in Krishna consciousness we know by now there is no, you know, such, there is no aspect of money making. You know, we are there to give people prasadam for free. You know, there is no concept of taking money. People give voluntarily, that's another thing. But, you know, we are not there into a money making business. So when people accuse Srila Prabhupada, you know, that you are creating all this, you know, as a business, it's similar insult, you know, that Dhruva Maharaj went through, trying to compare. Srila Prabhupada said, "Yeah, nothing wrong in that, no?" He said, and look at Srila Prabhupada's memory, you know, such a sharp memory he has got. He said, "In secondary school I had learned that for somebody to be a successful businessman, he needs four things. This is genius of Prabhupada. Don't do that. No, you'll strangulate yourself. Okay? Don't never put rope around your neck. Okay, it's very dangerous. Prabhupada said, for somebody to be a successful businessman, you need four things. How many of you have done economics in secondary school? You have. You probably won't remember because I didn't remember either. He said you need four things. You need land, you need labor, you need capital, and you need organization. He said, I had read this in economics text, you know, when I was in secondary school. So to become a businessman, I need land, labor, capital, and organization. So he said, land I have got. I have got Mayapur as the land. Labor, I have got the Americans. Top class labor. No? Not the lazy laborers from other parts of the world. I've got top class labor. Capital I don't have. I didn't have. You know, I only had 40 rupees. But now I have got many temples, you know, and we are distributing books like anything. So I've got the capital. And the organization I have got, which is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That organization I have got. So with these four, no, we will form a business of giving Krishna consciousness to everybody for the welfare of all. And our transportation will be to take people from this material world into the Vaikuntha planets. That's our objective. Just imagine, you know, how he uses, you know, the criticism with a positive attitude. Thank you for, you know, criticizing me. I'll use it as a positive attitude of transporting people from material world to the spiritual world. That is our business, he said. And we have got all four limbs of the business that I need. That's the genius of Srila Prabhupada. So, this pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, you know, which is what Srila Prabhupada wanted to give us, you know, the journey from crisis to success. All of us are going through our own, you know, test of times. How do we get the same success as Dhruva Maharaj gave? No, that Prabhupada gave us through the tenets of ISKCON. No. Now, this title, this chapter is titled Dhruva Maharaj Retains Home. The word home is quite interesting. Actually, there are maybe five or six chapters in this particular section of Bhagavatam that talks about Dhruva's pastime. And three of the chapters Prabhupada translates or writes as, the first one is Dhruva leaves home. That's when he went to the forest to chant. And then this one is Dhruva Maharaj retains home. He is coming to his material home. And then this, couple of chapters later, then the next one is, you know, the Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead, goes back to home. So he's moving from, you know, inside and outside, outside to inside, the leaves the home, comes back to home, and then goes to his real home. So when Dhruva Maharaj is leaving for back to Godhead, you know, to go to Dhruva Loka, we know that pastime of, you know, how, you know, he's so humble, being, you know, closer, the more closer we get to the Lord, the humbler we become. He's no longer angry, you know, at any of his kith and kin, you know. If anything, his kith and kin have also been purified just because of Dhruva's austerities, you know. Suniti was already his mother, but Surichi was, you know, very, very favorable to Dhruva now, you know, seeing him as a pure devotee. So, when Dhruva Maharaj is going home, what is going home means? For devotees, going home, going back to home, you know, back to Godhead, is not a termination, but it is a transition, you know, from one realm to the other. You know, a lot of time when people die, not a lot of time, probably all the time, when people die, you know, there's a lot of tears, you know, there's a lot of lamentation, you know, there's a lot of sorrow, you know, there's a lot of grief, you know, in the families. The near and dear ones, you know, when a person dies. Prasad Prabhupada explains to us, you know, when a devotee departs, you know, there is celebration. That's why we celebrate appearance day and disappearance day as well. We are probably the only, you know, society which also celebrates disappearance of somebody. You know, on a disappearance day of the acharyas, you know, we have a big feast and big dance. Because we are joyful. We know they have gone to their real home. You know? So, as an energy, you know, that I was trying to think of, in the olden times, not so old, you know, maybe 30 years ago, 20 years ago, when a girl would get married, you know, and the boy would come to the girl's house, you know, with the procession, you know, and there will be a lot of these cultural aspects of the wedding. This is Indian wedding, by the way. Yeah? There will be a lot of cultural aspects of the wedding being organized. And at the time when the boy is leaving, you know, this house of the girl with the girl, there's a lot of crying going on. You know? There's a lot of tears. by the mother, by the father, by his friends, relatives, and everybody is crying. There's a lot of crying, because the girl is leaving the house for the first time. Seeing all this, the boy is also crying. He doesn't know why he's crying, but he starts crying. And he probably doesn't stop crying thereafter. The girl might stop, but the boy's cries continues, for the rest of the life. So, there's a lot of tears. And now, why is there tears? Why is there so much of crying? Because there is the fear of the unknown. The girl is going to the boy's house for the first time. How will the in-laws will treat him? How will the girl behave? How will the husband treat him? What will the families think of him? Etc. There's so much of fear of unknown that this is bringing the sadness of the departure of the girl from the house. Now, if you fast forward to today's time, especially in a Western country like this, even if it's an Indian marriage or a Western marriage, what's happening? Generally, we know, not that we approve it, but the boy and girl starts living together before marriage. They are renting together. And then after some time, after 3 or 4 years of renting together, whatever, staying together, or at least they are courting together. After all that, then they think of getting married. Now the same marriage that happens now, after the boy and the girl have been together and they have got their own house, own home, when the marriage is happening, after now that the girl has to leave, the house of her parents, there is hardly any cry, hardly any tears. Correct? If anything, the girl is saying, bye mom, tata papa, see you, Bunty, Very, very happily she is sitting in the car and driving away, Why? Because she knows she is going to her home. If anything, the house of the biological parents has actually become, not her real house. Although she is born and bred there. But the house where she is now together with the husband is a real, is a house for the lifelong now. She knows that. So the fear of unknown is not there anymore. So it's just a transition. Not a termination, but a transition. Not even a transformation. Just a transition from one to the other. If anything, there is happiness rather than sadness, which used to be 20-30 years ago. Similarly, in this pastime of Dhruva, and that applies to all the devotees, pure devotees, when Dhruva Maharaj is leaving the earthly planet, when he's about to sit on the chariot that the Vishnu Dutas have brought for him to take him to another planet, to Dhruva Loka, Dhruva is happy because for him there is no fear of unknown. Being a pure devotee, fully situated at the lotus feet of the Lord and saving him nicely, being his loving affection to the Supreme Lord, he just knows that this is only a transition from this particular earthly planet to the Dhruva Loka. But the activity will continue as the same. A devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what we learn out of it is that for us, our death, when it comes, because it is not a question of if it will come, it's a question of when it comes, we should be so much prepared that we see it as a transition from one place to the other without any sadness. That, oh my Lord, thank you for keeping me engaged in your service while I was here, as on the earthly planet. And now I'm looking forward to going home where I can see you forever, saving your lotus feet. So it should be a very joyful transition. Of if anything, from our prison house, Prabhupada explains us that this material world is a prison house. So we have to see it as a transition from the prison house to our real home. And that's what Prabhupada said, back to Godhead, back to home. That's our home. Foolishly we think that we are, our two-bedroom house in Albert Park or Truganina or Tanit, or Werribee or Dandenong is our real home. Even there we are so scared. We have got alarm system, insurance for the property, insurance for the content, full of fear, even inside our own house. Correct? And we are so deeply attached to something where within the house we are already so fearful. So we should have the aspiration like Dhruva Maharaj of coming back to our real home, back to Godhead. Is that okay?
Yes.
I'll stop here. I've got 5 minutes to take maybe one or two questions. No questions? All clear? Yes. through Rupa.
Maybe you can translate all your analysis into what we as devotees can do in our own spiritual journey back home.
So Dhruva Prabhu has requested that, you know, I analyze all this that I have spoken in terms of what it means as a takeaway for us. Okay, well, in other words, you are asking me to recap, and I'll recap in 2 minutes and we'll stop there. So I started with the fact that, you know, the previous pastime was about, you know, something that was transitioning from a big success to a big failure, and that was the pastime of Daksha. In this pastime, we are seeing that Dhruva Maharaj is going through crisis to Krishna. Through his crisis, he uses this as a stimuli, as a springboard to reach Krishna. So although he is heavily insulted and quite angry being a Kshatriya, because his mother has given him a good counseling. So it is so important for us as parents, to give good counseling to our children, which means that we should have good virtues in our own life to be able to imbibe it in our children. And any child for that matter. So giving him the good advice, and then Narad Muni, seeing the deep aspiration and the sincerity in Dhruva's heart, immediately appears there to guide him into the process of Krishna consciousness. So for us, when we have got the deep desire to save Radha Vallabha, then Krishna will facilitate that desire through some means. He will send some devotee in our life who will be able to guide us in terms of how to undertake that activity. Because on our own, we might go astray from time to time. So a deep desire is important, not just some floating desires on the top. Because, those desires will come and disappear very quickly. But when we are sincere, deeply longing to save the Lord, then the Lord will facilitate us. Our desire has to be sincere and deep, as I said. We should not only long for the Lord, but we should also belong to the Lord. There's a difference between being longing and belonging. When we long for the Lord, we just desire Him. But when we want to belong to the Lord, that means we have taken the realization that I'm Krishna's. There's a difference between just being with the Lord and being His property. As jivas, we are properties of Krishna. Mamayamsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. We are all part and parcel of Krishna, so we are His properties. Of course, in a very highest sense, when pure devotees see that they are Krishna's property, but Krishna is their property. The gopis see Krishna as their property, and that is the highest realization. For us, at least, we have to see that we are Krishna's property, and therefore save Him, until we get the realization that Krishna is our property, because Krishna is Bhakta Vatsala. So He is, he's there, to save the devotees. He subjugates himself to the pure devotees. So that intense desire is important. Then Dhruva Maharaj, when he starts worshipping Krishna, Chaturvidha Bhajante Maam Miso, he comes with the attitude of adulterated desire of trying to find something material wealth. So his desire is motivated, material in desire. But he is able to transform that material desire into spiritual desire through being given the bona fide mantra. And then he starts repenting his material desires. So, even if we have material desires, we should still come to Krishna. And the Lord will fix our attitude, or we will still fulfill our material desires together with giving us bhakti. So, either desires we have, we still come to Krishna. And then Krishna says, Chaturvidha Bhajante Maam. You are all coming to me. You are all magnanimous soul. So, no point in going elsewhere, even if our desires are adulterated. Rest assured, with sincerity, it will get purified. So, what happened to Dhruva, which can happen to us, my last point is that Dhruva Maharaj saw Krishna as the object of worship. Okay? Dhruva Maharaj saw Krishna as the object of worship. He just saw Him as an object through which He can get His desires fulfilled. What bhakti does through the purification process, it changes our vision of Krishna as the object of worship to objective of worship. There's a difference between object of worship and objective of worship. When we see Krishna only as the object of worship, then we are worshipping Him to satisfy our own grievances. But when we see Krishna as the objective of worship, then it becomes that Krishna is my goal. So we have to make Krishna as the objective of our worship, that we want to make you know, Him as our goal, you know, our paramdham. That's what we want to achieve. And when we get that realization that Krishna is our objective of worship, then what happens? Rather than seeing Krishna as only our destination, because objective is something that we want to achieve, correct? So that is our destination. So in that mindset, you know, our mind changes from seeing Krishna as our destination to Krishna is also our companion. Krishna is there throughout the journey with us, and not that He is waiting for us at the end. As devotees, we think that Krishna is waiting for us at the end of the journey. No, that's not right. Krishna is already there with us. He is our lifelong companion. Suradam sarva, bhaktaram ignatapasam, sarva loka maheshwaram. Suradam sarva, how does it refer? Suravam sarva bhutanam, sarva loka maheshwaram. So suradam sarva, Krishna is our dear friend. As Paramatma, which Prabhupada writes here, Srila Prabhupada writes that He is the super soul in the heart of the devotees. So as Paramatma, He is already there as our companion. We don't have to achieve Krishna at the end of our journey. He is already there with us. We just have to have that realization. Yeah? So when Dhruva Maharaj saw Krishna within him, and all of a sudden Krishna disappeared, then he got very agitated and he opened his eyes, and then he saw the same, you know, the Supreme Lord is standing right in front of him. So the Lord that was all the while with him came in front of him. So the vision is still the same. Yeah. So we have to take Krishna as our objective, as our goal of worship. You know, that we want to be with Krishna. Knowing that Krishna is already with us, it's just a matter of being able to see Him face to face now. You know, rather than seeing Him face to face at the end of the journey. Is that okay? Enough takeaways for today? Thank you, Prabhupada. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.